Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
That's the Mike Jones gigantic studio orchestra playing the Penn Jillette theme, because this is Penn Jillette on the radio. I'm in Las Vegas, but I'm talking to New York. I'm talking to D.C. I'm talking to Baltimore. I'm talking to Chicago. I'm talking to
San Diego.
San Francisco. Sure. Also, and don't forget Detroit. Don't forget the Motor City. We're talking to all those. And, of course, Las Vegas. We're talking to Las Vegas, certainly.
Police officers listening in San Diego.
I know. That's cool. That was a cool little letter.
That's a cool letter.
From now on, I get up every morning. I read all the papers. I go through Google and Drudge and all that stuff. But I think we're just going to start just reading the Gmails, because we get hundreds of Gmails, and just sorting them by who sends us the most articles and figure that's what they want us to talk about. I don't mean who sends us the most articles. I mean which articles get sent the most.
Yeah.
And just sort through them and just say this is what we talk about. Because today there was a clear, clear winner in the Copperfield robbery letter. Everybody sent us that. 866-313-FREE-3733. That's 866-313-FREE-3733. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. I'm about to talk about Copperfield. this will be, as I just having said Copperfield, David Copperfield, I have broken a promise that I made to myself.
His ears have perked up.
David doesn't listen to the show.
Someone on his staff is listening.
Right, but David's not up this early. David is in real show business. You know,
he's Copperfield in Florida is not, right now, though.
He's in Florida?
Isn't that
11,
where the,
12, 1, 2?
Where the robbery?
Yeah, somewhere around Florida. But still, 2 is pretty early for him, man. Okay. Lance doesn't get up. You know, is he still listening to our show?
I don't know.
Chris Angel isn't up. I mean, real professionals in show business don't get up till 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So I imagine even if he is up, he's got something better to do, like have coffee for breakfast or something than listen to us. But maybe someone on his staff is. I've known Copperfield since Hector was a pup. I've known him for must be at least 20 years. Well, must be longer than 20 years I've known Copperfield. And we've always had this odd relationship. We get along really well, you know. I've been to his not often.
No dating?
No dating, but I've been to his apartment.
This is the first person you've spoken about that you weren't dating.
No, well, I'm going to explain why. The reason we're not dating is because I'm a boy. There's no word for what I am that could be said on the air. A certain kind of jerk. We get along really well. I mean, he's taken me to his apartment in New York City, and he lives like a Batman villain. I mean, he really does. If you were going to attack somebody, or a James Bond villain, you know, it's like the top penthouse in the middle of Manhattan, multiple floors, and one level is all, carny machines, and there's all these, 100-year-old stuff. Then you go up another, and it's like, marble floors, and there's a outdoor swimming pool that comes off his bedroom, and not that I've ever been to his bedroom, and the glass lifts up, and he's got like the Academy Award for Casablanca there, and a piano, and it is like the most beautiful place ever been in, like millions and millions and millions of dollars. I mean, this place costs, I mean, probably just the maintenance on it is like hundreds of dollars a week. And it's huge and it's beautiful. And we sat there on his couch, and my wife was there. We had a really good time. He spoke really, really kindly. We talked about magic. We talked about really good stuff. He was really cool. We got along perfectly. And then like 4 days later, someone on the radio sets me up for a joke, and I do a really mean-spirited joke about a man who'd had me to his house. Just the lowest. If my mom and dad were alive, they would not approve. They would say, oh, you're trashing this guy? You trash this guy all you want? And I would say, yeah, I have trashed him. And they'd say, don't go to his house, Penn. And if you do go to his house, don't accept candy. He had candy. He gave us like those cool wax lips things and stuff.
It was really great.
It was really great, We went to see Todd Robbins' show. Todd Robbins has another show in New York now where he does a seance. I think Todd Robbins claims this. I probably shouldn't say this on the air. This is probably secret. But I believe Todd Robbins, who does a phony seance, which is redundant, of course. All seances are phony, where anything happens. But he has this great show. I don't even know what it's called. But if you're in New York, Todd Robbins, look that up. He's doing a show in New York. It's great. He was asked to do the Lennon thing, he said. So they called him and asked him to do the seance on Lennon. I don't know if that's true, but he told me that. I repeat it on the air. You know, I have no secrets from my audience. So I said a lot of mean things about Cosby. And I mean mean things over the years. And then he would call me up, and we'd have these long, heartfelt talks. And he would say, okay, we get along well. Don't say mean-spirited things about me in public. And I would say, of course, Dave, of course. We're friends now. We'd shake hands. We'd be really happy. And 4 days later, I'd be saying the meanest thing I possibly could in the press. And finally, he called me up and said something that really made my blood run cold. He said, you know, Penn, you can promise you're not going to say mean stuff again about me, but you're an addict. You're like a crack addict. It's like sitting down with someone in your family that's like on heroin, and they look you in the eye and say, I promise you I won't do heroin anymore. You have to know they're not telling you the truth. He said, you are just addicted to saying mean stuff in the press. You're just addicted to being a dick, you know? And he explained that to me, and he's right, you know? So I have been avoiding this, and then I was so close to not saying anything, you know? And then they asked me one thing when we were doing Deep End. We were pimping the TV show that was going to be on NBC, and they set me up for one comment, and I said it in a – okay.
You took the swing. The pitch was there.
No. I was on a conference call with a bunch of press people, and I thought we were talking confidentially.
Yeah, that's a good story. They took it out of context.
No. They actually made it a little better than what I actually said. They made the context better. And, you know, and he came over the house to watch the Aristocrats, you know, and with his crew. Wonderful. Polite, you know, brought chips. Couldn't be a better guy. Could not be a better guy. Was kind about our movie, laughed afterwards. And then he said, and you're still saying stuff about me, aren't you? So I have been very, very good. And fortunately, I don't think I have anything snotty or pissy to say about this story. So I'm going to go. And David, I hope your people are listening. And the thing is, there's never anything behind it. That's the thing that I think that's why I feel so safe. You know, like I get really worried when I talk about people that like lead these protest groups, you know, these religious groups that like write letters to us and write letters and say, you know, Penn Jillette must be fired because he has a different belief than I do. Those kind of people I have this raging dislike for. I really disagree with them, and they really do attack me, and they really do hurt me. So those people, everything I say about them is measured and careful, and I don't want to be quoted exactly wrong because there's this real bile that flows up in me about this. But Copperfield, I'm pretty happy about. So I feel very free about it. And then I say stuff that's so much meaner than I say to the people that really attack me. The guy who was kind to me, I'm meaner to than the guy who's really mean to me. You know?
Trust your friends to believe you.
Yeah, exactly.
They know you.
But it's in the public. It's not, I mean, certainly any of the stuff I've said, if I said it to Copperfield's face, which I have, he would just laugh. It would be fine. But I'm talking about the man's goddamn career. It's totally indefensible. And they called me after the last thing I said, the Daily News called me and said, Copperfield said to us when we called them that you claim to be his friend, and that you said you wouldn't say mean things about him, and then you just lied and said mean things about him. What do you have to say about that? And I went, he's right. He's just right. You know, and that's the problem. The problem is when you feel like you are clean and you're okay all the way through, you're apt to say stupider things. Case in point, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, I believe, one of the finest liars that we've ever had anywhere. Anything that's slimy, he was great at. They asked him about smoking marijuana, and then he said the stupidest thing anyone has ever said. He said, well, I didn't inhale, right? And everybody jumped on his ass and beat him senseless for that. You liar, you liar. And I believe the reason he said something that stupid, because Clinton's not stupid enough to say something like, I smoked marijuana but didn't inhale. If he were lying, he would have been careful. If he were lying, he would have been careful. But because he felt, well, you know, I just didn't inhale. Because you know the kind of slime bag that, like, I don't smoke dope, never have smoked dope. So when I'm handed a joint, which hasn't happened in, you know, 30 years. But when I was a kid, you know, when you're supposed to be smoking dope, and they'd hand me a marijuana cigarette, I would say, oh, why don't you listen to The Grateful Dead, you retarded bastard? And I'd throw it down. Oh, screw you. What's wrong with you? Go buy some more tie-dye, hippie. You know, I would be really, really abusive. But there were people like me.
Buy some more tie-dye? That's abusive.
Okay.
Sorry. I didn't mean to stop you in the middle of this rant.
No,
but buy some more.
It's not abusive at all. You know why it's not abusive? That's not what I said.
Okay.
That's not even close to what I said.
That's the radio version.
That's what I'm trying to say on the radio. I can't say what I said to the hip. I was going through all the words I said in order that I would say when I was handed marijuana. And there's really not even, I mean, even retard. You're not really supposed to say retard. Retard is a really unkind word, you know. And I try to use it in a grade school sense, but still, that hurts people's feelings. God damn it, everything you say hurts people's feelings. You're in a straitjacket. If you have compassion, you cannot talk on the radio. Anything you say is going to be, you're going to say, you know, this morning I had a banana for breakfast. And then someone's going, my daughter died because of a banana. She was killed by it. Someone's crying. So you can't say anything. You know, can't say goldfish. You know, can't say boxcar. Can't say boxcar. Someone's hit by a boxcar, falls out of a boxcar. And I certainly can't say what I would say to a hippie that handed me marijuana. But then there's the other people. And you know these people. I was an aggressive sober person. I was aggressively anti-alcohol and aggressively anti-drugs. I was really, really confrontational. Can you imagine that? And there were other people, though, that were wimpy about it. And they would hand them marijuana, and they would go and they would not inhale it, and they would hand it to the next person. So they were not smoking dope, but there was no waves that were made. I believe Clinton was that kind of guy because he's a mediocre sax player, and that's what mediocre sax players would do. So Clinton, he's asked a question. Okay, he's asked a question. He lies. He's asked a question. He lies. He's asked a question. He lies. He hears, did you try marijuana? And he goes, wait a minute. And part of his little brain that wants to be moral goes, this is great. I can actually tell the truth. And then, because he's caught off guard, he says the stupidest thing he said in his presidency, except, you know, what is, and I did not have sex with that woman. He said a lot of stupid things. One of the stupid things was that. So Copperfield's exactly the same. I don't mean he's a liar. I don't mean, you know, marijuana, nothing. I mean, the way I feel about Copperfield, when it's someone like one of those fools from one of the leagues, you know, the League for Human Decency, that Ben Gillette must be fired, and it's like him and his wife and his family and like 10 guys with crayons that write letters to ABC or whoever they want to write letters to. Those people, you know, I'm very careful. I want to say the exact right thing. But Copperfield, who's a friend, I like Clinton talking about marijuana. So Copperfield, I think I have something here that David and I agree with 100% and that I don't have a lame joke. I won't be backed into a corner and say, see, what happens is they would ask me a question. You know, Penn Jillette, you're a funny guy. Say something. Here's Copperfield. And then I wouldn't have something really funny to say on my own. So I would throw my friend in front of the bus. This is the kind of scum you're dealing with. If you ever have a chance to meet me, just don't, because I would throw you. You know, you're one of my closest friends. You know, I work with you. You're one of my I would throw you in front of a bus for a laugh in a second. You know what I mean?
But I know that.
In front of your children, in front of your wife, they'd be like, oh, Penn, you need a joke really badly. Hey, look, Goodell's in front of a bus. Boom, and he's dead. And it would be like, okay, I got a joke. It's all right, you know? And there's very few people I love more than you in the world. And I would take a scalpel to your nose if I thought I would get a laugh and I needed one. That's the kind of scum I am.
That's why I have the writer for you. It's my job to save my nose. Mm-hmm. If I don't come up with a joke, I know my nose is gone.
This is Dateline Today, West Palm Beach, Florida. This is an AP story.
So this happened last night?
Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
I think so. David Copperfield has magically escaped getting robbed. The 49-year-old, sure, illusionist. Was, no, that didn't happen. I know for a fact Copperfield is 49 years old. There's no lie there. I was just saying that.
It's just a joke.
The 49-year-old illusionist.
What'd you say? You said the 49-year-old loser?
I said illusionist.
Man, you are not going to get through. You can't even read this paper.
The 49-year-old illusionist was walking with two female, assistants.
Why don't we just give Copperfield the number so we can call in now?
Copperfield has a number. It's 866-313-3733. Walking, he's walking with two female assistants, and he has really attractive assistants.
He does.
To their tour bus after his show Sunday night at the Performing Arts Center. When I'm going to put in something that isn't even here. After his sold-out show at the Performing Arts Center. It was definitely sold out. Every show Copperfield does is sold out. He has never had an empty seat in his house. I was going to say something else right there. But I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna. Because if there were an empty seat, he'd fill it with somebody that was working for him. The Performing Arts Center, when four teens... No, that's not true. He has sold-out crowds all the time. When four teens pulled up in a black car, police report said, two armed robbers allegedly get out of their car. That the allegedly word is not because Copperfield's lying, because they have to do that in the paper. Demanded the group's belongings. One woman handed over $400 from her pockets. He pays his assistants well.
Apparently too well.
An assistant with $400 in her pocket? That's a lot. It's more than I have in my pocket. And the other gave her purse with 200 euros.
Wow.
He has assistants
that's
that carry
sexy.
Euros
200
in Florida.
Euros is sexy.
He carries euros in Florida. How much Euro trash do you have to be? And her passport, plane tickets, and cell phone. Copperfield refused to empty his pockets. These people are armed. They're armed. It doesn't say gun, but they're armed. We don't know what they're armed with. It could be Copperfield says he turned his pockets inside out to reveal nothing in them, even though he was carrying his passport, wallet, and cell phone. Call it reverse pickpocketing, Copperfield told the Palm Beach Post for Wednesday's editions. Copperfield read the license plate number to the car to an assistant while she called 911. He's too cool to call 911 himself. I love that. The report said four teenagers were arrested and charged with armed robbery. They were held without bond, police said. The woman's property was recovered. Okay, when you learn magic, when you're, and I'm speaking of myself now, not Copperfield, when you're the loser, you know, the loser kid in school with no skills at all, no friends, and you're sitting there practicing, all you are dreaming about is that you are going to be robbed at gunpoint. It doesn't say gunpoint, but a weapon. Maybe it's a knife. Maybe it's a yo-yo or frisbee, but they're armed with something.
Armed.
I would like to think they're armed with a gun for
Uzis.
They're armed with a gun for the story, but for this to really happen, Copperfield's not a stupid man. He's a smart man. So if they were armed with a gun, he wouldn't have done something. But anyway,
yeah.
I don't think. You know, I see gun. You know, we catch bullets in our teeth in the show. And if someone comes up and goes, yo, you can do that trick with you, I go, no, it's a trick. It's a trick. And I throw my hands in the air and I cry. That's what, when I am confronted with an armed robber, crying would be my first choice. Crying and sobbing uncontrollably, maybe soiling myself and vomiting would also be on the list. Copperfield does magic. See, that's...
I don't want to say I'm going to go on your side. I think you would have made the right choice. Copperfield doing a magic trick is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
No, it's teenagers. It's teenagers.
They have weapons.
They have weapons.
They're crazy teenagers.
But
they
doesn't say what the weapons were. The weapons could have been a yo-yo, could have been a frisbee.
What does Copperfield make per show?
Hundreds of dollars.
Okay.
Hundreds.
So let's
hundreds.
Say he's carrying $300. Why not give him the $300 on the off chance that they won't
shoot you? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, you Louisiana fool. I'll tell you why, coon ass. I will tell you why. Because this is the cool thing to do. Do you understand that? This is the cool thing to do. This is the only reason we live. You're the one who said, get the best stories you can out of life. Copperfield has the best story. I don't care about him banging Claudia Schiffer. I don't care about him making $50 million a year. I don't care about him doing more TV specials than Wayne Newton. I don't care about him being a talk show host, a guest everywhere. I don't care about him moving the Statue of Liberty and walking through the Chinese Wall and vanishing a jet. I care about the fact that a 12-year-old boy somewhere in New Jersey made a promise that he would grow up to be cool. And he grew up. They pulled a gun on him. He did sleight of hand and then called his goddamn assistant to call 911. That's what I care about. I care about Copperfield living a dream that all of us dreamt when we were in school, and none of us have the balls to live. Copperfield, thank you for doing this right. I'm sorry for my partner who insulted you. We'll be back after this. Free FM, 866-313-FREE, 3733, Pendulette. I love you, David. I take this radio show very, very seriously. Like,
yep.
Very seriously. So seriously that during the break, I decided to install software on my computer and then reboot. So all my notes are now, I have that little, I have a Macintosh computer here. I am sitting with it with a PowerBook. And that little beach ball that spins around while it's thinking,
yeah.
I have that going now. So this will just show you. How long have we been doing this show?
3 months.
Okay, 3 months. And 5 days a week, right?
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of shows.
So far.
Yeah, 50 shows or something. I can't tell you the phone number that people are supposed to call in. 866.
I put it on the wall behind
me. Oh, yeah, okay. 866-313-FREE for Free FM. I barely know that we're on Free FM, you know, without the computer opened up. It's just I'm just looking at an apple with a bite out of it. I saw this news story that I wanted to read. I got nothing on this. I'm not going to add anything to this. I'm not going to take off on it or do a whole thing on it or anything. But it just really made me laugh. This is in The Week. You know the magazine The Week? It says this news magazine, all you need to know about everything that matters. It's a great, great magazine. They pull stuff from all of the newspapers. And in their little kind of cutesy stuff in the front, of course, they have comedian Gilbert Gottfried, Unsexiest Man in the World by the Boston Phoenix, which is picked up everywhere. I got to tell you, I almost said Copperfield. What am I talking about? Gilbert. Now, Gilbert is a really close friend of mine. So, Gilbert, I will just tear him a new one. You know, I have no respect for Gilbert whatsoever. Gilbert is an unsexy loser. Gilbert is a psychotic. Gilbert is a sociopath. Gilbert has, you know, every sort of bad habit you could possibly have, Gilbert has. He's a curmudgeon-y, hateful little prick. Did I say that? Probably not.
And yet the funniest man in the universe.
Certainly the funniest man in the universe. My computer's not ever going to boot up.
You want one of mine?
No, it's okay. You got two. You got two. I only got one. Gilbert's girlfriend, whose name is Dara, who writes to me now and again on email, she is so proud that he's the unsexiest man in America. She's so proud that he's the unsexiest man and that she loves him. And boy, Dara loves him. She loves him like, you know, like a virus. She really does. I mean, she just really has no control. I mean, and you don't know what could possibly be the reason she would love him. I mean, he's not attractive, the unsexiest man in America. He's annoying. He takes a lot of maintenance and he's rich. Oh, yeah, he's rich. That could be it. But, you know, just doing that Disney
stuff.
Have
you ever been around him?
I've been around him a lot.
Does he seem rich to you?
He doesn't seem rich at all, no. He seems like the poorest person ever. You have to buy him lunch. But maybe she's found a way to bleed him dry. But anyway, I'm not reading that. I'm not reading that article. I'm reading the one under it, which is, it's a bad week for headbangers. Listen to this. After a Canadian, of course Canadian, when you hear this whole story, it is so Canadian. And I want to say, before I do my whole Canadian thing, that my roots are all Canadian, okay? My family's from Newfoundland. And Newfoundland, understand, I have to rhyme it, Newfoundland. My family is all from Newfoundland, so I really have a right to talk about Canadians. This is great. You think everything I said about Copperfield was good? There were a few little asides I threw in that were just jokingly, but I want to make it very clear. I hope this would be my one kind of thing that I said about Copperfield that was just terrific and glowing and wonderful. You know, he's rich. He's the most successful. You know what? Copperfield is the most successful magician of all time. Do you know that?
I did know that.
There's never been a magician more successful in the world ever.
It's a $50 million apartment, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. He is so much more successful than Houdini. He is so much more successful than any magician like that. And he will be remembered. He has the largest collection of magic anywhere. He's a historian. He's a smart guy. Everything's perfect. And probably he's going to call me up and go, why don't you just shut up, Penn? But everything I said was nice. I wish I could just be a good guy. I try so. You know what I'm like? I'm like Cujo. Did you see the movie Cujo?
No.
The dog wants to be nice. He wants to be a good dog, but he is destroyed by some evil demon within him, which I think is probably my problem. And it's probably why I'm such a skeptic, because one of the things the evil demon wants me to do is to have people be convinced there's no evil demon. Isn't that from, it's not from originally, Usual Suspects, but doesn't Kevin Spacey's character have a line where he says the biggest trick that Satan ever pulled was getting people to believe that Satan didn't exist? I have an evil gremlin that lives inside me that I'm trying to convince people doesn't exist. My computer is now back up.
We have actually a Gmail that kind of addresses that. It says he can't imagine a more empty phrase from Penn than "God damn it! If you're going to curse, curse to Zeno, you monkey-loving parasite farm." That's from David. Thank you, David.
Dave. Isn't it Dave? It's the name Dave. Dave. Yeah, Dave. Dave gets
you. Monkey-loving parasite farm, you.
I am a monkey-loving parasite farm. There's no doubt about that. In Canada, after Canadian man was hit by a speeding train while walking along the tracks, which is really the only way you can hit by a train. Just, you're pretty safe. Sitting right here, we're pretty safe from trains. Now, trains do occasionally derail. But, you know, your chances of being hit by a train go up by at least a factor of two or three when you are on the tracks. Would you say?
That's my guess.
We pretty much know where trains are going to go.
I'm not exact on the math.
Yeah. He was listening to a Norwegian heavy metal band called Gorgoroth. You know a band, Gorgoroth?
No. Tirnanug's the only one I know.
Gorgoroth? What's that?
Tirnanug is the only one I know.
Tirnanug?
Yeah.
Is that a...
You know, I bought an album. A friend of mine, Kelly, bought an album when we were kids. And I don't remember what album he was trying to buy. It was, you know, Barry Manilow something. And when we opened it...
You had a friend who was trying to buy Barry Manilow?
I don't remember the name of it. But when we opened the album, it was not what was on the cover. It was a band called Tirnanug from Sweden or something. And it was a great album. Hmm? And we've never found anything else by them.
Have you searched on the web?
It was before the web.
Well, so they'll be on there now.
They're on there now. I believe there's a kids show now called Tirnanug. But
Tirnanug?
Tirnanug.
Spell it.
No. Okay. Tirnanug, I believe.
Someone will write in who is a Tirnanug fan.
I'm excited about
that. And that Tirnanug fan probably,
I want some more Tirnanug,
probably works for Copperfield. So this guy was hit by a speeding train while walking along the tracks, which is a really good way to get hit by a speeding train, listening to Norwegian heavy metal band Gorgoroth on his headphones. Quote, "I thought, holy crap, dude, you just got hit by a train," said Jesse Magra, 20. Sure.
He said it to himself?
Yeah, that's what I guess so. Maybe he said it aloud. After being propelled 15 feet through the air, he suffered only a few broken ribs. Now, this is the quote you want to tattoo on your ass backwards. You can read it in the mirror. Okay? Here it says. Maybe this is a quote from Jesse, who was hit by a train because he was walking on the tracks listening to a heavy metal band. "Maybe the metal gods were smiling on me and they didn't want to lose one of their true warriors. I'm sorry. They didn't want one of their true warriors to die on them." "Maybe the metal gods were smiling on me and they didn't want one of their true warriors to die on them." I guess true metal warriors walk on train tracks. Just walk along on the yada-da, la-da-da, la-da-dee, la-da-da. I would be singing, of course, what Curly Howard always sings. La-da-dee, la-da-da. I would be singing something by Gorgoroth if I knew anything by Gorgoroth. But we'll probably get people writing in. Tomorrow we can talk about Gorgoroth and Tirnanug. Tirnanug. Why did you like Tirnanug?
It was just interesting. It was so different. It was fun.
Norwegian.
Because we couldn't understand the lyrics at all.
Yeah.
That's what made it so good.
Yeah.
They're singing about things I care about. They must be. They seemed so committed when they were saying the words.
What do you care about, Michael Gudeau?
Nothing. Really, okay. Unfortunately. My children. I care about my children.
Yes.
Hey, tomorrow is Bring Your Kid to Work Day.
Is it really?
It is.
Is it really?
It really
is. Not bring your daughter, but bring any kid?
I think it's Bring Your Child to Work Day.
Really? Should I bring Moxie?
Why not?
Bring her out on stage? Bring her out on stage with me? What'd you say?
She can come in here to the radio show.
Okay, yeah. Well, will you bring your kids to the studio tomorrow?
I don't know if they're in school. So
they're in school. Yeah. Both of them are in school?
Yeah.
How old's your daughter?
4.
Okay, but she's in like preschool.
Yeah, she's in preschool.
Okay, but you call it school and it's actually preschool. Just want to correct you there.
Thank you.
I had a lot more to talk about. A lot more to talk about. I want to mostly make a very controversial statement similar to the one John Lennon made in 1964. I want to say our show, Bulls, hit, is just a little less popular than Jesus Christ. We'll be talking about that right after this on Free FM, 866-313-FREE 3733. Has Copperfield called yet?
Not yet.
I'm very sorry. I'm very, very sorry. Whatever I said that bothered him,
I'm calling
sorry.
In to say stop kissing Copperfield's ass.
They say it?
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to happen. You're going to catch me off guard. Well, no more calls. We have a winner. We have a lot of information on Tirnanug.
Tirnanug.
Tirnanug. Tirnanug. How is that all pronounced? The Norwegian or the what is it? Irish?
Irish, I guess.
Irish, the giant O with the little thing up on the top. How's that pronounced? Nuk. Because you know, the umlaut gives you an R sound. So the name Mötley Crüe. That's the way Mötley Crüe, because they've got the umlauts over it. And when I met the gentleman from Mötley Crüe, I asked him if it was supposed to be pronounced Mötley Crüe. I went up really clever and, you know, boy, I really know my languages and so on. And I said, so do you? Is it pronounced properly Mötley Crüe? And they said, what? Well, aren't you the dude that does magic? Yeah, Mötley Crüe. So that was my interaction with Mötley Crüe. I want to read a letter that really bugged me. Because I don't know an answer to this, and maybe you guys can call in. 866-313-FREE. This is going to get real serious for a moment. This is from a man named Keith. Officially, I have 16 days left to sign up for the draft before I've broken the law and I'm torn. And I didn't even know. You still have to register for the draft.
Just to register for the draft.
On one hand, I really disagree with the law, and I don't want to suggest that I'm willing to go to war if my country needs me, because it simply isn't the case. On the other hand, I don't see being drafted as very likely and could possibly get out of it on the grounds that risking my life means more to me as an atheist. Good luck, Keith. Or because I'm a bit of a pacifist. Don't use the phrase bit of a pacifist when you go to talk to them about that. Just say pacifist. Not to mention the fact that I could be punished for not complying, more likely by missing out on federal privileges than being prosecuted. And my quality of life is as important to me as sticking to my principles. I realize that the draft is constitutional, and you guys kinda, sorta, absolutely effing believe in the Constitution. But I'd like to hear as many different arguments as possible before I make my decision, and yours would be fairly high on the list. This is really a show today, Dustin. When you're filling out this, you make your notes on today, and you put up the podcast. Say this is the inadequacies of Penn Jillette, the hypocrisy and inadequacies of Penn Jillette. Whether you're talking about
the title of today's show,
this is a really troublesome. This is a really troublesome Gmail. 866-313-FREE, 3733, penradio.com. I am 51 years old. Yeah, sure. 51 years old. And I was 1H in the draft. So I believe I registered for the draft, and then I was 1H. If I'd have been a year and a half older, I would have been right in the draft. Now, you're younger than I am. How old are you?
I don't know, 46.
46. So you 5 years younger than me. Vietnam was way
nothing.
Over.
Nothing. It was over.
But
no
you
chance.
Registered for the draft.
No.
You did not.
Nothing.
Why are
I
they
having that delightful break when you didn't have to do that at all.
But now you have to register for the draft. When did they bring that back in?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. This is the problem. You know, if you decide to truly, you don't have to register for the draft? Oh, yeah, you did. Okay. They were longer than 10 years ago? Okay. You have to register for the draft. And this is a really important point. This guy's 18, right? He must be 16 days left before. No, he's probably right around 18. And I don't know. I mean, I also know that I was dealing with that, too, because I considered being a conscientious objector. And I never thought of the argument that as an atheist, my life was more important to me. I mean, I guess there's some truth to that. You know, I guess there's some truth that if you believe in an afterlife, this life is a little more dispensable. I mean, you'll hear people who are filled with religious faith who will say, you know, this is just a stopover. I'm on my way to Valhalla. I want to keep a Norwegian theme going here.
That's good.
So this is just a temporary thing for me. But I don't think that would wash. I think if you went in and said, I'm an atheist, and therefore my life is more valuable than yours, I don't know how the draft board would feel.
I think to get into Valhalla, you have to die in battle.
Okay, yeah.
Perhaps a bad choice.
Yeah, but I mean, that's true. That's exactly right choice, isn't it? Valhalla, you do die in battle. So if you're an atheist, you're not going to go to Valhalla, so there's no reason to die in battle. That's his point here. And because I'm a bit of a pacifist. Now, this is the problem. A lot of us are a bit of a pacifist, you know? And I think that for conscientious objector, you've got to be way complete pacifist, you know? You've got to be a hardcore pacifist. But I don't know. I mean, I will tell you, Keith, that it seems in the time it seems very unlikely if you register for the draft that you're going to be called. And he says, My quality of life is as important to me as sticking by my principles. If that's the case for quality of life, I think the advice I'd have to give is to register. But I'll tell you, if I had my time back, it would be a harder decision. See, my decision, I was so panicked that I was going to have to find a way to deal with this issue, you know, whether it was going to be going to jail or going to Canada, which is obviously going to jail is better, or it was going to be trying for a 4F, or I was also going to try to be a conscientious objector. I was so relieved when the draft was stopped that it didn't even I didn't even consider the fact that registering itself would bother. I don't even know if I had to register. If I was one, I think I was 1H, so I think I must have registered because I know that 1H means you're put on hold. But some military people. Has anybody written in with advice on this? Because people must have opinions on that. There must be a lot of people 18 years old that are making this choice, and I've never heard anybody say anything about this. I mean, is there any sort of movement to not register for the draft? I mean, we now have Iran going nuclear. We have Nigeria ready to go bug nutty. You know, Iran seems to be dragging on and on and on. The oil thing, the whole thing is brittle. Everything's nuts. I don't think Neil Young alone is going to end all war in the world. So I don't know. If you register for the draft, you've already made that statement. Of course, you could say he's just registering, and then when the time comes, when the bullet hits the bone, to use a very bad cliche, inappropriate, he could just, you know, not go or try for it then. Because, you know, the window is not, if they do a draft, it'll be a very brief. Of course, you know, the draft could come back because people like Michael Moore. Didn't Fahrenheit 9/11 seem to you to just be a pro-draft movie? I mean, the whole movie is just about how the volunteer army is mostly poor, less fortunate people that go into the army for it, which is true. I mean, the army, if you're poor and uneducated and want to really rise above your station, then the army is a really good choice. You know, you get education. They give you all these benefits. Yeah, if you weren't able to get
involved,
a job,
yeah.
What's that?
A lot of respect involved.
A lot of respect involved. It could be a good move. And Michael Moore seemed to, you know, when I came out of Fahrenheit 9/11, I came out of it just going, oh, this guy really, really wants the draft because he wants rich people, you know, to also go into the draft. And that's the way you get, you know, World War II. You got everybody going into the draft. You got with a draft like that for World War II, for a popular war, and World War II was a very popular war, we got a lot of people going in. So I don't know, Keith, I'm so flattered that you think that our opinion would be high on your list of opinions, and now I've just shown my inadequacy and hypocrisy. I would like to think if I were 18 years old, I would stand up and not register. I would like to think that. But the thing was, when I was 18 years old, I put my tail between my legs, crawled down, and registered. I don't remember the day I registered. It was not even an important thing to me. It meant nothing to me. Isn't that a drag?
That's a drag.
If we get any calls specifically on this, maybe we'll break in
we
and take
it. We have people who want to talk about the Selective Services stuff, but I don't have any more information on them. But
yeah, okay.
We'll do that if you'd like.
We might take that in a moment. If you have any Gmails, pop those in because I want to take those calls.
Selective Services registration reinstated by Carter in the late 1970s.
So okay, that's what we got. I'll take one call, any one of these calls that's really on the subject.
Let's talk to Richard on Line 7.
Hey, Richard, Line 7, how you doing, man?
Hey, it was around 1983 when Selective Service came in.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do it back in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Carter. I think it was under Reagan administration we had to do this draft thing.
Uh-huh. So you registered for the draft then, is that right?
Yeah.
But you never went in, is that right?
Right.
Okay. And was that a hard decision for you to register, not going in?
No.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, boss. Thanks a lot. Thank you so much. There's some help for you, Keith. There's a caller that gives you their point of view. They registered. No big deal. It's all over. He's done. I did want to say this. You know, I was watching, because of our seance show yesterday, I was watching last night with my wife and with Moxie was also watching because she likes the music. We were watching the John Lennon Imagine, which is done by the producer of Bull's hit. His father did Imagine, the John Lennon movie. It's an hour and a half movie of all footage of John Lennon and so on. And there's a little bit in there about John Lennon saying they're more popular than Jesus Christ. And man, did he backpedal. I mean, they must have gotten so much muscle on him. You know, I've said things about being an atheist and about my beliefs that I believe very strongly, and I hold as strongly as anybody who believes in God. I hold my my anti-religious faith as strongly. It's as important to me, and I've made statements. And you get letters, man. You get letters from real psychopaths. And I don't think if you make religious statements, I don't think you get threatening letters from atheists. I really don't think that religious people get threatening letters from atheists when they say something. But I just want to tell the religious people that when you're an atheist and you make a statement publicly, just stating that you're an atheist, just like stating that you're a Protestant or a Catholic or a Jew, you get really hateful stuff, man, really scary stuff. And I can't imagine.
From the moral high ground, yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine what John Lennon got after he said he was more popular than Jesus Christ. But they were burning his records, which I never understood. Burning someone's records is great. They buy them, they burn them. Terrific. Everybody, please go out and buy the DVDs of Bulls. Hit and burn them. Burn all the aristocrats. As a matter of fact, each one of you, go out and buy 40 and burn those. But, I mean, he was getting a lot of pressure, and I'm sure that Capitol Records was all over his ass, and Brian Epstein and all the people.
It's got to be roughing up Brian Epstein on your ass.
Yeah, well, that's all Brian Epstein. All Brian Epstein wanted was to be on John Lennon's ass. He kind of just completely tumbled and said, I didn't mean that. I meant that some people would rather go to a Beatles concert than go to church. I didn't mean anything. It went on and on and on. And John Lennon clearly meant they were more popular than Jesus Christ. And John Lennon clearly wasn't religious, but, you know, he backpedaled. But then I just got Star Price, who's the director and producer of Bulls, hit. Called me up yesterday and said that our show, and I always hate radio jocks that talk about ratings, that that's a really important thing, like it's baseball scores. But what's interesting about this is that he was saying that the ratings for Bulls hit this year are very, very good. I mean, we're in our third season and our ratings are getting better, which is an odd thing.
But we're in our fourth season.
Yeah,
seems like three though, doesn't it?
It flies by when you're having fun. I'm really proud of it. We're doing better shows. Maybe that's why. And we kicked the ass of like Huff and Weeds and those shows that have a lot more money than we do. But he said, and for last week, we were the second most popular show for the whole week. The second most popular show for the whole week. Only one show got more people watching it than Bulls hit last week. And I said, what was that one show? And he said, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. It was the first airing on Showtime of The Passion of the Christ. So, therefore, in popularity, first of all, the Beatles, number one, more popular than Jesus Christ. Then coming in at a very respectable number two, it's Mel Gibson's Jew-hating The Passion of the Christ, the little S&M fantasy with his weird imaginary friend, The Passion of the Christ. And then coming in number three behind the Beatles and Christ, it's Penn and Teller's Bulls hit. So I wonder if they start burning your DVDs when you say, we're a little less popular than Jesus Christ. I wonder if there'd be big things down south saying, he can't say he's a little less popular than Jesus Christ.
Jesus got a better time slot than
he was on
from 9
to
11. We came on at 11.
We were riding on his, coattails. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Christ, it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, oh man, they're gonna crucify me. Be good to everybody, give things a chance. I don't know about the drafting, man, work it out yourself. I love you all, and David, man, David, I tried not to go back to the cracker.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.